From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Bon dimanche matin, je suis Rick Pearson et bienvenue dans l'édition de cette semaine de The Sunday Spin pour le 7 mai 2017. I thought I'd try something different. It's in honor of the French presidential election today, the contest coming down to Emmanuel Macron, backed by former President Obama, and Marine Le Pen, supported by President Trump. What'd you think, Schwani?
English, s'il vous plaît.
Por favor.
Por favor.
If there's one guy that could answer that, it'd be Schwani. He'd be the only guy that could actually speak back to you in French.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Entre vous.
Comme ci, comme ça.
I feel like we're at WGN Paris.
Merci beaucoup.
Oui.
Actually, it is a bonjour. It is a good day here in downtown Chicago with the sun shining, although the temperatures are still on the chilly side. And, Dave, I saw, overnight, it was below freezing out in the far west suburbs.
It was. Not only that, there was a wind chill overnight.
Yeah, well.
33. Well, good news is we are no longer looking at a wind chill right now. 43 at O'Hare. The winds are north at 8, but no wind chill reported.
Yeah. What about tonight at that Cubs-Yankees game?
Low around 38.
Wow.
Bring a jacket.
Wow. I hope they bring some bats, too. I mean, I got to tell you, that game Friday, I thought was just very exciting. And here you had, going into, through 5 at least, it was the Cubs were up 1-0 on one hit, home run. Yankees, no runs, 7 hits. And get another score, go to the top of the ninth, 2 out, 2 on, Cubs leading 2-0.
3-run homer.
3-run homer.
Boom.
And a ball game.
And then, to add even more misery, who comes in the bottom of the ninth? Aroldis Chapman.
Right.
And just blows them away.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, let me ask you, you're a longtime Cub fan. What's it like to see Starlin Castro hit a homer and drive in 3 against you?
It's a dagger.
He's hitting like 360.
I know. I was looking at his numbers, and, you know, there is always that, you always think about those Cubs trades and what might have been. But, I mean, let's face it, we're still the world champions.
Understand. But still, Starlin Castro is hitting 381. For the New York Yankees, and they're in first place.
Yeah, and I mean, and truly, they do look very good. I mean, they really do look like they are the team to beat.
I don't know if you heard, Schwani, the Senators won again too last night, so Rick's very happy.
Well, I wanted an update on that.
I was going to bring that up. Yes, that French speaking was for the folks, you know, there. I wanted to congratulate Ottawa folks there. So yeah, they're up 3-2. And I assume it'll be Monday night. It'll be the next game, but it's one of those unusual NHL series where it's the home team wins. And so, you know, actually, the Ottawa Senators were up 2-0 after their first 2 games at home. Still stunned by the fact that apparently that first game they played at home, there were 3,000 empty seats.
Are you serious?
Yes, I read that. Yes,
3,000.
Yes, 2,000 to 3,000 empty seats.
For a playoff game?
Yes. Second-round playoff.
And it's not like they're perennial contenders.
No, that's what I mean. I mean, that's why I adopted them. It's like, you know, this is an interesting team. And it was a great game, 5-4 in overtime. But I've got to say, the Rangers are playing crazy great. And, you know, I try to stay up with some of the Penguins game to see how they were doing. And I mean, they still look very tough, too.
I do enjoy the one thing about hockey fans, and I talked to somebody about this last night. They said, well, It's tough to watch with the Blackhawks not in it, but I still watch because that third period in a tie game or the overtime session is the most exciting thing to watch.
It is.
Because every shot, it could go in.
And we've seen fluke goals make the difference in deciding whether a team goes on to the next round or whether that ends their season. And, you know, the Capitals playing strong game finally against Pittsburgh. But, I mean, some really good series to watch. And although it is the hardest one to watch is Nashville versus St. Louis.
That's tonight.
Yeah. That's, I think, maybe even today. It might be a day game. But
2 o'clock.
Yeah. So it's yeah, though that's the hard one to watch. It really is. But, no, some great hockey being played. We got to get the Cubs and Sox going again. Cubs especially need to get going again. But the Sox have been, you know, in that division, they could be there all season long.
Last check, the Twins were actually in first.
See what I mean? if the Twinkies are in first place.
Oh, no, they lost yesterday. So Cleveland has a half-game lead on Minnesota. Sox are in third.
So there you go. It's going to be, but that division's going to be like that all season long.
Neck and neck.
Yeah, exactly.
Shawnee, you've been watching baseball too.
I have been following. I didn't see anything yesterday or Friday, but I've been following it during the week, and it's great to see. You know, you're right. The Yankees beating the Cubs 11-6 yesterday. White Sox losing, but you know, I'll chalk it up to the cold weather. I'll just leave it. I'll just blame the weather. I've been blaming the weather for a lot of things.
So until the weather turns, we should not expect much? Is that what you're saying?
June? Yeah. July?
June, yeah. After the the All-Star game.
So it won't be a June swoon.
Around the All-Star game. No.
All-Star game? That's mid-July.
Oh, wow.
Oh, bring your coats.
Yeah. I could not find the Cubs game on TV yesterday on my satellite.
Wait till they launch the Cubs network and you have to pay to watch it.
Yeah. Well, I hope they learn something from the LA Dodgers about that, given the carriage fees that Warner Cable, I think, was charging for the Dodgers ticket.
And then the team or the company that gave the Houston Astros like $4 billion, they went out of business already.
See, there you go. I mean, and look at ESPN too, and with the layoffs there and the whole issue of paying rights fees and all that kind of stuff, plus the digitalization of sports and the mobile app and all of that kind of thing. I mean, it really does change the dynamic that, you know, maybe just having a, quote, TV network isn't necessarily what works here.
I still think, though, if there's one team that could pull it off, it would be the Cubs because of the fan base, because of how large it is. A lot of older Cub fans all throughout the Midwest grew up watching the Cubs.
Sure.
So if there's one team that could do it and it doesn't make sense for it because of the range of people you could get, I think it would be the Cubs. But you're right. The generations that are behind us and they're coming, they want to watch games on their cell phones.
Right.
They don't want to watch it on TV and pay for it.
No. And, well, and truly with like a Cubs TV channel, you think of all the historic games that you've got in the vault that I'm sure, you know, that they could pull out and, of course, none of them culminating in a championship until last
Let's watch
season.
The Cubs choke again.
Yeah, exactly.
1945.
Let's watch that 1969 series with the Mets with the Black Cat.
Well, this weekend is the anniversary of Ernie Banks' 500th home run.
This weekend?
I believe so.
And
double-check the date. We were talking about that with Dave Plyer this morning.
And yesterday was the anniversary, the 17th anniversary of Kerry Wood's 20 strikeout game against the Houston Astros.
Ooh.
Which I saw a little video compilation of that, and my God, the way he was pitching that day.
That was one of his first ever starts.
Fifth start. Fifth major league start.
These guys were missing his curveball by a foot.
Oh, it was fun to watch these guys, and it was a one-hitter, too, which people
You remember
forget.
Who caught that game?
I don't.
Sandy Martinez.
Why would I remember that?
I'm just saying, nobody ever knows
that.
Right. Everybody always talks about who pitched.
Right.
He was the one who caught it.
Well,
somebody said Girardi. I don't know, Scott Servais.
He had to call it. He had to call it. You know, that. But and especially with a rookie pitcher. But you just see some of those guys swinging, and just it was like a wiffle ball.
That's a good way to put it. In a windy day.
Yeah. And but their bats were just, I mean, and they got nowhere close. I mean, it was Unbelievable performance. Unbelievable performance. So, well, let's go Cubs. Let's get one of these games against the Yankees tonight. Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Sam's got all of the sports. Producer Jasmine's here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. You can text us at 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin, all one word. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And engineer Bob is actually angling to be Jay Cutler's engineer for football broadcasts and intercept his speech patterns. Well, of course, if you have to tune away at any time, you can find our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcasts at iTunes by searching Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, 7:23 on this Sunday morning. Up ahead on the show, after the 7:30 news update from Dave, we'll be speaking to my Tribune colleague, Bill Ruthart. He's part of the Chicago Tribune's political and governmental team, and he'll fill us in on what's really behind this dispute between Governor Bruce Rauner, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, over the proposed sale of the James R. Thompson Center, a state government's headquarters in downtown Chicago. More news at 8 o'clock, and then we'll speak to Mike Reaver. Mike is the Vice President of Government Relations for the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. And we'll talk about the group's opposition to a Senate-passed bill in Springfield that deals with companies that keep and use data on their customers. We'll have more news at 8:30, and then we'll speak to Democratic State Representative Sarah Feigenholz of Chicago. She's the sponsor of legislation that aims to keep abortion legal in Illinois if Roe versus Wade is overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. Moreover, it would expand availability of the procedure to Medicaid recipients and those under state employee health insurance. Governor Bruce Rauner has indicated he would veto that legislation, even though as a candidate in 2014, he said he would support it. That's all coming up, but first it's time for our weekly spin through national politics. And of course, we start with a big political victory for President Donald Trump, with House Republicans passing their plan for repealing and replacing Obamacare. Here's the president appearing at a Rose Garden celebration with House Republicans.
This is a great plan. I actually think it will get even better. And this is, make no mistake, this is a repeal and a replace of Obamacare. Make no mistake about it. Make no mistake. And I think most importantly, yes, premiums will be coming down. Yes, deductibles will be coming down. But very importantly, it's a great plan. And ultimately, that's what it's all about. We knew that wasn't going to work. I predicted it a long time ago. I said it's failing. And now it's obvious that it's failing. It's dead. It's essentially dead. If we don't pay lots of ransom money over to the insurance companies, it would die immediately. So what we have is something very, very incredibly well-crafted. Tell you what, there is a lot of talent standing behind me, an unbelievable amount of talent. That I can tell you. I mean it. And, you know, coming from a different world and only being a politician for a short period of time, how am I doing? Am I doing okay? I'm president. Hey, I'm president. Can you believe it, right?
Now, there are serious signs that this bill is going nowhere in the Senate, with many Senate Republicans calling it flawed and saying they will start over from scratch. There are also concerns about waiver provisions that would allow states to opt out of essential care requirements, as well as coverage for pre-existing conditions. Well, when the bill passed, Democrats started singing, "Hey, hey, hey, goodbye," believing it could be the political end for some House Republicans. But why was this bill important for Trump? Last weekend marked his first 100 days with not a lot to show as an accomplishment. Even this is just a bill, not a law. But even as he once dismissed the 100-day mark as an artificial deadline, he put out a campaign ad to trumpet his accomplishments.
Donald Trump, sworn in as president 100 days ago. America has rarely seen such success. A respected Supreme Court justice, confirmed. Companies investing in American jobs again. America becoming more energy independent. Regulations that kill American jobs, eliminated. The biggest tax cut plan in history. You wouldn't know it from watching the news. America is winning, and President Trump is making America great again.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve approve this message.
And that is the ad from the president's 2020 reelection campaign. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Coming up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be talking to my Tribune colleague Bill Ruthart from the Tribune's political team. He had a great piece earlier last week on the issues surrounding the complicated sale, state sale of the Thompson Center and future development at that site. Also has a very good piece in the paper today about President Obama's visit last week when he came to unveil the preliminary plans for the presidential center. But also about the president and the messages and concerns about what's going on in the city of Chicago and whether that undercuts his former chief of staff, now Mayor Rahm Emanuel. That's all coming up.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Here in the Allstate Showcase studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue, a sunny North Michigan Avenue. And joining me here in the studio this morning is my good friend and colleague, Bill Ruthart. Bill's a member of the Chicago Tribune political team covering City Hall and Mayor Emanuel. And thank you so much for getting up with me this morning after going to that great Cubs game last night.
Yeah, it's good to be here. I'm willing to talk about anything other than that this morning. That was brutal.
Well, at least it's a little warmer here in this normally chilly studio than it is. Had to be out at Wrigley last night.
Yeah, and there's no obnoxious New Yorker sitting behind me, so I got that going for me too, right?
Only obnoxious Sox fans, right?
That could be.
There's a few of those around here as well. But well, thanks very much for coming in. And great work this week. A great piece on the issue of the Thompson Center, as well as the piece in this morning's paper about the former President Obama's visit and relations with Mayor Emanuel. But let's talk about this Thompson Center deal, because it kind of erupted a little bit this week on various fronts. And it, as the story says, it's a very complicated issue. And there's been talk of dumping the Thompson Center for a long time. And let's face it, it is a love-me-or-hate-me kind of building just from its visual appearances. But you go beyond that to actually when you go inside, and it's decrepit. I mean, it really looks decrepit. You've got duct tape being used when the governor isn't using it on TV ads. Apparently, they're using it to fix the carpeting on the floors.
Right.
I mean, it looks dingy.
They don't wash the windows very often. Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
And so, there aren't a lot of fans for it. I think other than Helmut Jahn, the architect, and Jim Thompson, who was named after. But that having been said, you know, Rauner seems the most dedicated about, you know, trying to get this building sold. It'll be demolished if it gets sold. But you have so many things at play. You've got the relationship or lack thereof between the governor and the mayor. And then you throw House Speaker Michael Madigan in, who Rauner, of course, has made his nemesis. Does this thing ever get off the ground?
Well, let's go through all the hurdles they have to clear. So there's many of them. The first of which is Rauner needs state legislation, basically, to let him sell the building. So very little legislation passes in Springfield these days, as we know, because the Capitol is gridlocked. So they'd have to set all their other problems aside and agree to at least allow this to go through, which maybe that happens at the end of the legislative session in May. The other issue is, Rauner has put out there that he believes that he and his administration believe that the Thompson Center and the land, the full city block it sits on, is worth $300 million. And so I dug into that because I was curious, where they got that number. And they've spent about $300,000 on a financial study that helped them come up with that number, but they won't release it. I spoke with one of their consultants who argued that it was a fair price given the current markets, and he pointed to a $100 million parking lot that sold in River North and the Tribune Tower, the building we're sitting in, selling for $240 million. But the Thompson Center has its unique challenges. It has a CTA station literally under and next to the building. And so that gives the city of Chicago a lot of power over what happens there. The city and the CTA own that station. And so that's what really involves Mayor Rahm Emanuel a lot. The other issue is the $300 million to get there, they're basing on 3 million square feet of development there. Well, the Thompson Center's 1.2 million square feet. Actually, the zoning there currently allows less than the Thompson Center,
which
is a million square feet. So they'd have to at least triple the zoning, which is a pretty big ask. The downtown alderman, Brendan Riley, has never approved any kind of an up zone, they call it, increasing the square footage on a site. In the 10 years he's been alderman, he believes in sticking to the underlying zoning on all these parcels downtown, because that's what people plan around, that's what people buy around. You know, he hasn't ruled out an increase, but so you got the alderman involved, you got the mayor's office involved. The mayor seems more inclined, at least his negotiating team, not to give a carte blanche for 3 million square feet. The way the zoning classifications are set up, you know, they don't want to guarantee that kind of square footage, because they lose control over the planning process and what do the buildings look like. There's also some politics involved of, if the zoning layers are lower, if the level is lower, there's a program that Emanuel started where developers can buy extra square footage, and that money goes into a fund that he uses and spends in the south and west sides to try to drive development there. So he has political reasons to maybe keep the zoning level lower so the developer buys more, but that doesn't help round or sell the land up front. So you got all these dynamics playing out. Not to mention, there's a ton of, you know, if you've ever been to the Thompson Center, there's that food court in the basement, and there's a Walgreens. Well, it turns out those retail leases run through like 2034, so Rauner would have to negotiate some sort of buyout to get out of those retail leases. There's also, where do you put 2,200 employees and 20 state agencies once you move them out of the building? State doesn't really have a lot of office space downtown. They could move a few folks into the Blandick building, but they say, oh, we can work with the county and city, the Daily Center, 69 West Washington. When I called around, those buildings don't have any space in them. So then we start asking, well, how much is it going to cost for you guys to lease all this office space downtown? They don't really have an answer for that. They won't give us the numbers. So, you know, you start poking at these numbers, and you got to wonder how good of a financial deal ultimately is it? What will the land really be? It'll depend on the zoning. And, you know, that's part of the deal in convincing lawmakers, is you got to convince them it's a good idea for the taxpayers to do this thing. And so there's a lot of unanswered questions. And of course, the last thing is you've got the political, you know, dynamic between Rauner and Emanuel. And basically every time they step in front of a microphone and you say the other one's name, they have some smart aleck comment about how the other one is incompetent. So, you know, there's a lot to overcome to get this deal done. That's for sure.
And it seems like just a lot of it is just soft, you know, fudging mm-hmm. numbers and things like that. We're going to talk more about, now that you've kind of outlined the hurdles, let's delve into that just a little bit when we come back. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by my good friend Bill Ruthart, colleague on the Chicago Tribune political team. We're talking about the effort to try to sell the space that now is occupied by the James R. Thompson Center, the state government headquarters in downtown Chicago. And before the break, you outlined all of these hurdles here. But, you know, when you look at this and you look at some of the numbers, like the Rauner administration saying they expect $300 million for that. Now, you know, what is that based on? Because, you know, there's schematics like, oh, there could be the Chicago's tallest skyscraper could be on that block.
Yeah, they put out some conceptual drawings to try to get people excited about the possibility of it being redeveloped. And one of the drawings was, I think it was a 1,700-foot super tower, which would become the tallest building in Chicago. You talk to anybody in the real estate market, they basically say there's no market for those kind of buildings anymore. When you see them go up, they're usually subsidized by, you know, the Chinese government or some government in the Middle East. So just highly unlikely that kind of a building would get built. One of the other concepts was three different towers on the site, one a hotel, one a condo tower, one office. That's a little more realistic. The more you chop up the uses on the site, the better chance you have of being able to build more square footage. But that price tag's based on 3 million square feet. And again, to put that in perspective, that's triple the size of the Thompson Center, which is, you know, a 17-story. It's a pretty big building. So that's a lot of density. It's not saying it's unprecedented to build that kind of density on a full city block in Chicago, but there's a lot of buildings going up right now. The market is hot, which is why Rauner is trying to have this sense of urgency to sell it. The other thing that the governor says is driving this is that he's claimed there's $326 million in deferred maintenance for the Thompson Center. And he took reporters on Friday down to the basement to see
the boiler room
to see the shoddy HVAC system that's down there. And he says that that needs to be replaced in the next 2 years and could cost up to $80 million. And so, you know, but those deferred maintenance numbers, again, $326 million in maintenance, that's a ton of money. It also coincidentally happens to be about as much as he thinks the land is worth, which is a coincidence. And, you know,
triple the estimate from about a year ago.
It was $100 million a year ago. And so when I asked for the breakdown of the deferred maintenance, they wouldn't give me anything other than the claim that the HVAC was $80 million. So, you know, whether it's a $300 million price tag or the amount of deferred maintenance, when you start asking for details, the Rauner administration really doesn't have many.
Well, and that's, I mean, that's why I'm saying about there are just so many things that just are really soft about this, you know, because of, I'm not sure that there's hard enough details yet to move this thing.
At least to convince lawmakers. But, you know, some people would argue even if you break even to get rid of the headache that is the Thompson Center and just get rid of it, and if you get the state employees relocated and at the end of the day the costs are even if it's that, some people argue that's worth it in itself, you know, to put something better on that site. And, you know, now the preservationists who have put the Thompson Center at the top of Illinois' most endangered buildings would not agree with that.
Well, I mean, and let's talk about the issue. The CTA is a big issue, as you said, second busiest stop in the whole system.
Yeah, and
then you have this. Well, the mayor saying, "Well, we're not going to pay to rebuild. The city's not going to pay to rebuild this if it gets redeveloped on that site."
Right, and Emmanuel, yeah, he basically said if there's a new station, which is likely if it gets developed, we're not paying for it, and that's a position that the mayor's team has had in negotiations for months, and that was no surprise to Rauner. It shouldn't have been. I mean, the mayor deciding to air publicly, happened this week. It was at the same time the story was about to run.
Coincidentally, right?
The same with the governor and his people talking about it. So, the CTA station, my sense, and from talking to people who have been in the rooms handling the negotiations, is that the CTA station probably isn't as big of a hang-up as the zoning. And the zoning is what allows Rauner to try to get the most money.
That's the price tag.
At the market. And Emmanuel wants as much money as he can for his neighborhood development fund. When these developers pay for extra square footage above the zoning limits, that puts it in a fund that the mayor controls that he can then use to spend on the west and south sides of Chicago, areas that he needs a lot of help politically.
We've got our call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Hey, good morning, Bill. Excellent art I have it in front of me. The only thing that's bad is that building reminds me when U.S. Cellular Field first opened. Just really bad building.
Do they have duct tape on the upper deck what is it called now?
Now that's guaranteed rate field.
What I call it, but it's okay.
It was great. Bill, two things. First of all, I can see where this could benefit the governor and also Ron, because you talked about the bonus program. But the key person is Mike Madigan. If it doesn't benefit him, it probably won't happen. And I'm trying to put you on the spot, Bill, and ask you, do you think the sale will go through? Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Ron.
There's a deal to be done here. He's right about that. I mean, there are things that can benefit the mayor. There are things that can benefit the governor. He needs some kind of win. He needs to actually be able to tell people he's done something. And even selling a building isn't that big of a deal, but at least it looks like he can say he's done something for the taxpayers. And so, Madigan is a factor, but I think at the end of the day, if Emmanuel thinks he's got a good deal for the city, and Madigan can extract some sort of movement on something else in Springfield toward the end of the legislative session, I don't think that that this doesn't go through, if a budget doesn't go through or something like that. I think there may be ways to work something out. But
I do agree about the extraction process.
Oh, absolutely. And the same for the mayor. I mean, the mayor is dealing with a governor who's vetoed $215 million in funding for Chicago Public Schools. I mean, that's part of the reason that there's so much animosity between themselves and their respective administrations. And so they got to overcome all that stuff to get it done. And so whether it happens soon, I don't know. You know, Rauner's latest gimmick to try to put pressure on the mayor was to say that they would dedicate any – they would introduce a bill in Springfield that would dedicate any future property tax revenue generated there to Chicago Public Schools, which the response from the Emanuel administration is, oh, now you care about Chicago Public Schools. And, of course, that would be years down the road anyway, and
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
not a ton of money compared to what the needs are right now.
Right, and it does not do anything about that $215 million that, you know, rightfully or wrongfully CPS cooked into their budget, which was money they didn't have.
Right.
And was truly uncertain that they were going to get it. But right. Nevertheless, that kind of is a symbolic piece of legislation, and Rauner had that introduced by both of the Republican leaders in the legislature. So, you know, it's all rolls into this kind of logjam in Springfield. That it's one piece of the puzzle, but the puzzle keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's one big dysfunctional puzzle.
Not something that will be on sale anytime soon in any of your retail stores. Real quickly, the take on the president's visit and as he laid out kind of the vision for the presidential center.
Mm-hmm.
And he does have to kind of walk a fine line here about, you know, undercutting Rahm Emanuel, doesn't he?
Well, I think it was interesting to me when I watched it is that you had a former president returning to the South Side and trying to gain some credibility in the room. He was leveling with South Side community leaders about why his library is a good idea. He wants to close a major road on the South Side to help open up the park for it. And in the process of leveling with the folks in the room, you know, he talked about minority job contracts and how, yeah, we'll have the requisite number of minority jobs, but you guys all know those numbers get cooked anyway, you know, and mm-hmm. Parks on the South Side aren't as nice as parks on downtown on the North Side, and neither are the playgrounds. And these are comments that aren't exactly, you know, talking points out of the mayor's office. And Emanuel, you know, his supporters would argue, and in some cases, rightfully so, that he's done more to spread amenities around other parts of the city than some of his predecessors. So he's raising some of these issues that maybe don't exactly fit the Rahm Emanuel narrative, but that also gives the president credibility in these Southside communities where he's, you know, trying to garner support and dusting his off his old community organizing tactics to get support for his library.
Yeah, it's a great story, and it's in today's Sunday's Tribune, so please take a look at it. Bill Ruthart, my colleague at the Chicago Tribune, thank you so much for joining me this morning, and hope you have a short day upstairs in the newsroom.
Thanks, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with Mike Reaver, Vice President of Governmental Relations for the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, and welcome back to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Continuing our spin through some of the week in national politics, an interesting week as always with the president. There was President Trump's interview with Selena Zito on Sirius XM radio, in which he talked about President Andrew Jackson and questioned why there was a civil war.
They said my campaign is most like my campaign and win was most like Andrew Jackson,
right,
with his campaign. And I said, when was Andrew Jackson? It was 1828. That's a long time ago. That's Andrew Jackson. And he had a very, very mean and nasty campaign because they said this was the meanest and the nastiest. And unfortunately,
his
continues.
Wife died.
His wife died.
Yeah.
They destroyed his wife and she died. And, you know, he was a swashbuckler. But when his wife died, you know, he visited her grave every day. I visited her grave, actually, because I was in Tennessee.
Oh, that's right. You were in Tennessee.
And it was amazing. The people of Tennessee are amazing people. Well, they love Andrew Jackson. They love Andrew Jackson in tennis.
Yeah, he's a fascinating
player. I mean, had Andrew Jackson been a little bit later, you wouldn't have had the Civil War. He was a very tough person, but he had a big heart, and he was really angry that he saw what was happening with regard to the Civil War. He said, there's no reason for this. People don't realize, you know, the Civil War...
Yeah.
You think about it, why? People don't ask that question. But why was there the Civil War? Why could that one not have been worked out?
Why was there a Civil War? Of course, Jackson died 16 years before the Civil War. Also, last week, there was Trump doing a 100 Days in Office interview with John Dickerson for Face the Nation on CBS. And when Dickerson asked Trump about his unproven allegations of surveillance by the Obama White House, well, Trump was finished.
He was very nice to me, but after that, we've had some difficulties. So it doesn't matter. You know, words are less important to me than deeds. And you saw what happened with surveillance, and everybody saw what happened with surveillance.
Difficulties how?
I thought that, well... You saw what happened with surveillance, and I think that was inappropriate.
What does that mean, sir?
You can figure that out yourself.
Well, the reason I asked is you said you called him sick and bad.
Look, you can figure it out yourself. He was very nice to me with words, and when I was with him, but after that, there has been no relationship.
But you stand by that claim about him?
I don't stand by anything. I just, you can take it the way you want. I think our side's been proven very strongly, and everybody's talking about it, and frankly, it should be discussed. I think that is a very big surveillance of our citizens. I think that's a very big topic, and it's a topic that should be number one, and we should find out what the hell is going on.
I just wanted to find out, though, you're the president of the United States. You said he was sick and bad because he had tapped you.
You can take it any way you want.
But I'm asking you, because you don't want it to be fake news. I want to hear it from President Trump.
You don't have to ask me.
Why not?
Because I have my own opinions. You can have your own opinions.
But I want to know your opinions. You're the president of the United States.
That's enough. Thank you.
That's enough. Thank you. Well, switching gears here, joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Mike Reaver. He's the Vice President of Governmental Relations for the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. Mike, thanks so much for joining me here this
morning. Thank you for having me, Rick.
I wanted to have you on because... a lot of activity going on with a piece of legislation in the Illinois Senate. Senate passed a bill which on its face is designed ostensibly to protect consumer data, companies that collect data, sell data, that kind of thing. I'm sure mainly spurred by the lifting of kind of some of that privacy issue stuff in Washington over issues of internet providers, those kinds of things. But, I mean, this is a much more expansive piece of legislation, and the chamber has some very serious concerns about this.
Yes, we do, actually. So it's a Senate Bill 1502. It's called a so-called right-to-know bill, and I think it's important that, you know, your listeners kind of understand that it is not really a bill so much about privacy as it is much a bill that, from the chamber's perspective, that we're concerned with, because it allows plaintiffs' firms and trial attorneys to basically sue businesses for information that they are now required to collect and maintain under their under this existing law. So it's couched in terms of privacy, but it's very much driven by one plaintiff's firm here in Chicago that is pushing this, because that's what they do, is they sue companies for these types of inactions. So infractions. So that's a huge concern for us, because whether you're large, small, in between, and actually the Chicagoland Chamber, we represent all of those types of businesses, large and small, you can be sued for everything that's listed in the bill, including things that are actually not listed but are not limited to what's in the bill.
All right.
Such as height, weight, gender, things that are not necessarily sensitive in many respects. You know, I think normally people think of Social Security, you know, phone number, credit card information, driver's license number. This includes, again, gender, sexual orientation, race, weight, height, eye color, you know, anything like that, that now, because of the law and a consequence of it, is that you would have to collect and maintain that information, because now stuff that was not always easily identifiable by person, you now have to maintain that by person, because if that person then asks you as a company to provide what you shared, you have to know who that person is in order to then provide that information.
So this in essence, what you're saying is it would basically require an increased collection of data beyond what companies do that maybe aren't as data savvy.
Correct.
Know.
Yeah. Ironically enough, it is going to actually require companies to maintain more information than is otherwise required and actually maintain that information in a more identifiable way. So now you as a person are now linked with this information. If it gets breached, your information is now identifiable to you.
Whereas in some cases, these companies or some companies would just more have a generic pool. It wouldn't be person specific.
Correct. Yeah. It would just be information that is you know, kind of collected in the course of business, not necessarily identified by a person.
So what is it that, well, we're going to take a quick break,
sure.
but when we come back, I mean, what is it that this law firm that you're talking about, what is it that they're after? I think we know one answer
yes,
to that.
Yes,
but,
we do.
But just what are these, what are the ways that the law would be infringed upon? Okay.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this. This is your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, along with Mike Reaver, Vice President of Governmental Relations for the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. We're talking about legislation that passed the Illinois Senate last week that's been given kind of the good government title of Right to Know Act, but it's a legislation that the chamber opposes out of concerns about litigation, largely.
Yes.
And so, I mean, what would be the basis of litigation?
So basis of litigation basically would be, and again, I think it's important, or it's good for the people to have a right to know where this is coming from a plaintiff's firm here in Chicago that, you know, they want to be able to sue businesses. This is what they do. So one of the causes of action, for instance, would be, again, we kind of talked about the identifiable information. There's a laundry list of items in the bill that are not actually limited to those items. So if a customer then requests that information from a business and they did not maintain that information that's not only listed on the bill, but also that they have to anticipate because, again, it's not limited, that customer could ask for that information. If they didn't get that information, then they could seek to have it have that company sued.
Because
they did not maintain that information.
Well, I mean, so the proponents of the bill say it seeks to promote transparency, online transparency, and citizen privacy, requiring online companies to identify the categories of personal information they collect about citizens, and giving citizens the ability to find out what categories of information online companies sold about them and the names of the third parties the information was sold to.
Right.
That's the overall summary of that.
Yes.
Right. Now, but when you dig deeper, that's where you find, I mean, it's always in the fine print.
Correct.
Are the issues that you're concerned about.
Correct. I think that, again, it's, you know, it's couched in the terms of privacy and consumer protection. I don't think there's a business in Chicago or in the nation that doesn't take seriously consumer protection, consumer data privacy, and protecting that person or that consumer's information. Because let's be honest, if you're facing a PR meltdown of data breach or whatever, that's bad PR. You're going to lose market share. You're going to lose money. You're going to lose brand reputation. And that's all very valuable to businesses. So there's businesses already protect information. They already have privacy policies and place to protect. But I think, again, kind of what you said with, you get deeper into the details and you start to realize why this bill is actually being pushed, why it is empowering plaintiff's attorneys and trial lawyers to be able to sue businesses even for honest mistakes is a very huge concern for us, because it's not only the big businesses that have, you know, in some ways the financial resources and capabilities to actually to fulfill the law, but it's the small and medium-sized businesses that are not going to have an in-house attorney, an in-house
IT.
You know, IT person to be able to do this, all the training that's involved. So if it was just about privacy, I think you'd see the business community come around to it. But it's not just about privacy. It's couched in terms of privacy and good government, or I'm sorry, protecting consumer data. But it's really not about that.
I know, too, that one of the concerns is that, you know, given Chicago and the growth of high-tech startups and those kinds of things, that there's a concern that a bill like this might be an inhibiting factor for, I mean, let's face it, because a lot of these tech startups are the new small businesses of the world.
Right. And recently, I think In March of this year, actually, KPMG came out with a study that identified Chicago as the sixth in the entire world as the fastest growing tech incubator in the entire world. And that's an important moniker for the city of Chicago. It's a badge of honor, obviously, for not only the city, but for the mayor. So I think this bill, when you talk about what this bill actually does to businesses and the tech industry as a whole, specifically, there is a chilling effect that really kind of hovers over the ability for that industry to grow.
Is there a happy medium here between both sides on this?
I always like to think so. I know the sponsors of both bills, the one in the Senate and the one in the House, they've actually moved over now. But I think there always is. But I think as long as there's this, plaintiff's firm,
the outside presence,
if this was just about privacy, I think we could get somewhere. But as long as you have the ability to sue for anything basically that you want to for a company not maintaining information, I think that's a big problem.
Let's move to the broader issue of Springfield and the dysfunction in Springfield. And you spend more time down there than I do, because right now I'm not sure there's any reason for me to spend much time down there. I still talk to a lot of legislators, but
right.
I just don't see anything moving forward that provides the kind of, stability that people, that your members want. The business community, they may not like all the taxes, they may not right. like whatever, is just as long as there's just some stability of knowing right. what they confront.
Right, absolutely. And again, our membership is very diverse. We've got non-for-profits, we've got hospitals, from the small businesses to the large businesses. So they're impacted very much by the budget impasse. And, we're hopeful that the four legislative leaders and the governor can come together and kind of work something out. I think as we look to a timeline, I don't really think May 31st is necessarily.
I don't think anybody believes that to be a deadline. It hasn't been for the last couple of years.
It has not. Although the K-12 funding has been the issue that has been the force that has pushed some type of resolution, whether it was in the form of a stopgap or something else. So I think that is your kind of real deadline is June 30th.
Because of the schools.
Because of the schools, and I think no politician can withstand angry parents not having the ability to send their kids to school. So,
especially as we move into already what has started as the 2018 campaign cycle.
Yes, very early. You've obviously got, is it four or five, six Democratic candidates for governor?
That was actually a question asked at a Cook County Democratic organizing meeting yesterday. How many candidates are there? But some might argue too that maybe that's exactly what's needed, is because nothing has moved anybody forward here, and that a shutdown of schools might be enough to move people.
I think that when you're looking at pressure points, I think the biggest one is that K-12 is the shutdown of schools. Not obviously that anyone wants that to
correct.
Happen.
Correct. Absolutely.
If that were to happen, obviously that would be a pressure point. Because all the other pressure points are gone, right? The state employees that are getting paid without an appropriation, that's usually a huge pressure point in instances like this, but that's not obviously the case. You've got 90% of the budget flowing through court orders, consent decrees, and continuing appropriations. So there's really no pressure point other than that K-12 and whether schools are going to open on time.
Yeah, and nobody, for the most part, obviously we're into this more than,
yes.
But for the average person,
they're not thinking about it until those schools don't open.
Right, because right. nothing so far has necessarily affected
correct.
Them in whatever casual relationship they have with state government.
And unfortunately, it's only been the social service providers and
right.
the college institutions here in Illinois that have really suffered the most out of the budget impasse.
Mike Reaver, thank you so much. He's the Vice President of Government Relations at the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. Appreciate you coming in this morning.
Thank you so much, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to State Representative Sarah Feigenholz, Democrat from Chicago, who surprisingly came into the studio this morning, obviously because of the sunshine, and it's a beautiful Sunday in downtown Chicago.
Seen you in a long time.
Okay, that's fair enough, fair enough.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. It's sunny North Michigan Avenue, though still a little chilly out there just out on the WGN Storm Center patio. But Hopefully we'll get those temperatures warming up, though, not necessarily downtown by the lake. So if you're going to the Cubs-Yankees game at Wrigley Field at 7 p.m. tonight, as my guest, Democratic State Representative Sarah Feigenholz, is going to the game tonight.
I am. It's in my district, Rick. It's my job.
It's constituent service.
It's my job.
Well, do me a favor and get a win tonight would be, let's fly the W and beat the Yankees. Would be nice. Well,
tonight's the night.
But bundle up.
Always do.
Let's hope there's hot bats. That's on the Cubs side this time. Well, I wanted to have Representative Feigenholz in to talk about a bill that prompted some interest in the governor's race, in this early jockeying in the governor's race. And it's interesting from kind of the genesis of how this sparked into the governor's race. This is legislation that ostensibly is aimed at removing a trigger mechanism that Illinois' abortion law would be triggered back to a ruling that a U.S. Supreme Court ruling if the court rules that Roe v. Wade is tossed, and that Illinois law would trigger back pre-1975 and abortion would be illegal in the state. Moreover, it would expand abortion coverage to Medicaid recipients, as well as those covered by state employee health insurance.
Exactly.
And, you know, some of the debate was, for example, for state employee health insurance, like some state university workers, while students have abortion coverage in their student health insurance, the faculty and people working at state universities don't have that coverage under current law.
That's correct. And I just feel, you know, this is an issue. The Medicaid funding piece and the state employee funding piece has been an issue that has been brought up for many years. I have seen, since I've been in the General Assembly, Barbara Curry sponsored it. Judy Irwin sponsored it. I believe that even Rosemary Mulligan may have even been a sponsor of it, the late Rosemary Mulligan.
A Republican from Des
Plaines. Thank you. Yes. So this is something, you know, that you'll see the Ounce of Prevention, the Guttmacher Institute, and many foundations and think tanks. They'll tell you that this is a really prohibitive thing for women and families, women who are trying to continue on a path of economic independence, where they should be able to decide when they go to school, when they start a family, et cetera. And in any other sector, whether it's, you know, I'm a state employee, I do not have, if I got pregnant, I would not have access to abortion care. My insurance wouldn't cover it. But if I was an alderman, or if I work for the state, the city, or the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, just like you said, I would have that service. And if I was a man, I would have access to vasectomies and Viagra.
So this bill passed the House.
It did.
And this bill passed the House despite the veto threat issued by Governor Rauner. And why I bring up the governor in this is because in a questionnaire from Personal PAC from April 2014, the governor wrote, he was asked specifically about both elements of your bill. And he basically wrote in his, and I'll quote him here, "I fundamentally believe that abortion should be a woman's private decision, hopefully in consultation with her loved ones and her faith community, and that decision should not be impeded by government." He went on to say, "My highest priority in this area will be to ensure effective administration of the laws regarding access to contraception and provide that access regardless of income. I dislike the Illinois law that restricts abortion coverage under the state Medicaid plan and state employees' health insurance because I believe it unfairly restricts access based on income. I would support a legislative effort to reverse that law." That's Bruce Rauner's answer to Personal PAC on a questionnaire from April 2014. Now he says, focus on the budget. and that this is taking our focus away from the budget, and that he believes current law is sufficient, even though he said in 2014 as a candidate that it was insufficient.
Correct. I'm glad you brought that up. I think it's very alarming. It's funny. I feel the reaction from people who were hopeful that Bruce Rauner was a pro-choice gubernatorial candidate. I think this is a really important issue. I think about the visceral reaction we have to candidates, the three hot button issues that are either make it or break it: guns, gays, abortion, right? And I think that the reaction I'm getting from people around is how betrayed they feel, how this is very often a litmus test for people. They want to know if a candidate's pro-choice. They read or heard that, and other people attested to it. Also, Diana Rauner took out a full-page ad in the Chicago Tribune. There were many people supporting him under the guise of him being pro-choice.
He had no social agenda, Diana Rauner saying in the advertising for the 2014 campaign. That was her words about Bruce Rauner, that he had no social agenda.
If that's a way of getting out of a promise, is that what that is?
Well, that was back then to say, you know, the people are trying
right.
to, you know.
Well, I mean, long story short, Rick, I'm dismayed. I think I don't know why he did this. I feel filched. I think a lot of people think he's a flip-flopper. And this bill's going to pass the Senate this week, and it is going to end up on his desk. He will likely get 100,000 phone calls into his office to reconsider and sign this bill.
Now, some have suggested, since he hasn't really elaborated on what this veto may be, about perhaps just vetoing out the Medicaid state employee health insurance portion of it, trying to say that it's because of cost factors at a time when the state doesn't have any budget.
But there is no cost. The governor's, the Department of Health and Family Services in the 99th General Assembly filed a fiscal note. They revised a fiscal note when they considered the offset of what it costs, what a birth costs. They revised the fiscal note to zero. You'll notice that there is no opposition from the agency and state government that pays for state employee health insurance. There was no weighing in on that portion of the funding, on the state employee funding, only on the Medicaid funding. So, I mean, really what this says to me, Rick, is that there's still such stigma around women and their health choices. You know, I think that, you know, if you talk to Dr. Willie Parker, the anti-choice world has gotten the moral high ground on this issue, and they have successfully stigmatized women and just completely shamed them on this issue, and they need to stop, because this is healthcare. This is healthcare. Europeans listen to our conversations about abortion, and they laugh at us. We need to stop stigmatizing women. We need to let them get on that path to economic independence. And having these choices, and, you know, all of these red herrings who are members of the General Assembly on the floor that were saying that this is a $60 million cost, zero is the number I got from the governor's Office of Management and Budget. So what are we talking about?
We're speaking with Sarah Feigenholtz, Democratic State Representative from Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio with State Representative Sarah Feigenholtz, Democrat from Chicago. We're talking about legislation that she passed through the House and which she says will pass through the Senate this coming week, dealing with the issue of abortion rights, expanding abortion coverage to Medicaid recipients as well as those covered by state employee health insurance, as well as eliminating any question about a overturning of Roe v. Wade by the U.S. Supreme Court and how that would affect availability of the procedure here in Illinois. Some people have suggested that this legislation is being brought up to put the governor in a trick box.
You know, that's nice. And let me tell you why I sponsor this legislation. Because I know the cost is zero. I know I meet my constituents and people from all over the state really struggling. I feel that this is unfair and discriminatory. It's not a new, this is something we've worked on for 20 years. And three Republican governors believed, and you know, Jim Thompson wrote a tome, a veto message about a prohibition bill of Medicaid funding that basically said prohibiting poor women and state employees from access to this is cruel and discriminatory. George Ryan, Jim Edgar, Jim Thompson all agreed. The variable is a gentleman who's our governor now who has flip-flopped on this issue unfairly. You know, if the public doesn't understand the fear of women who are listening to Donald Trump, who basically, while he was candidate, Trump said, yeah, abortion could be illegal in some states. I am going to appoint a Anton Scalia-like Supreme Court. He essentially supported overturning Roe. It forced lawmakers to responsibly see what they can control.
And he said women should be punished.
Manage the panic, right? As a legislator, it's our responsibility to make sure that abortion remains legal, accessible in Illinois.
Well,
and safe. Because, you know, Rick, you remember maybe when Cook County had 17 beds, an abortion septic unit, and where women were self-aborting or going to back alley abortions and dying and leaving. You know, there was one doctor who testified who said that a woman bled out in the unit and left 7 children orphaned. We are not going back to those days. And in order for lawmakers to make sure that doesn't happen in the state, we have to pass this law.
One thing we've talked about, you know, his option, as he said, he would veto. If he mandatorily vetoes it, that effectively would also kill the legislation because the House does not accept mandatory vetoes. So
I'm glad that you brought that up. I think that if the governor thinks that that move is going to save him, he's wrong. You know what? If he does that, that means he's anti-choice. And that is how the women of the state of Illinois are going to read it, period.
I want to move to the broader issue of Springfield as here we are in the month of May, which is supposed to be the end of session deadline at month's end. And I'm not sure that we're going to see any kind of end of session resolution. You're much closer to the action going on there. But I just get this sense of we've already moved on to the 2018 campaigns for governor and the General Assembly and other statewide offices, and that we're on this kind of autopilot as we keep going deeper and deeper in debt.
Well, I know that May is crunch time, and there was a shift, and there have been a lot of meetings going on, but there are daily meetings now. Discussing the budget and options it is very, very disheartening. The governor has not been cooperative. You know, I have passed bills in the General Assembly, and what I normally do on tough stuff is I talk to people. I sit down with members on both sides of the aisle on an issue that's important to me, and I try to achieve the rule of 60. You've got to get 60 votes or more for something. The governor's not really done that on anything, whether it would be some of the non-budgetary issues that he so artfully tries to inject into a budget conversation, which I've never seen before. Usually, substantive legislation is discussed in a separate conversation. It's not leveraged, especially over this period of time. I think that our caucus doesn't see it being a very productive way to spend our time. with, you know, trying to negotiate on other elements. The Senate did a great job and gave more than we would have ever imagined, and really tried to put a deal together on some of the governor's items, while they also were able to kind of get to a budget solution to for a balanced budget. And what was very eye-opening to me, because I really was hopeful that maybe Cullerton and Senate Minority Leader Redonio in the governor's office would be able to come to a deal, is at the very last moment when a deal was
pending,
the governor apparently assembled or called many Republican senators in and said, "You're not voting for this." And he pulled the rug right out from under the Senate president, the minority leader, Christine Redonio. And the very disappointing. But it also was illuminating that, you know, I mean, I don't think the governor wants a deal. You know, I'm not sure what he thinks he gains out of this. You know, the school's not opening. Social service agencies, our institutions of higher education are crumbling. You see, you know, Northeastern Illinois University taking furlough days, not moving forward on programming that they were going to do, cutting summer classes. It's really awful. And kids not being able to get MAP funding. You know, the governor talks a lot about people leaving the state. There's a huge exodus of college students leaving Illinois because there's no stability here. So we are ready. We're ready. But we need somebody to do this with. The governor's supposed to lead. I wanted the governor to pull Republican votes on House Bill 40. You know, I thought he was a pro-choice governor. I was looking for a leader as a governor. It doesn't really matter what party they belong to. You have to have leadership skills. And he has failed. He has not engendered and enlisted support on anything. He's never asked for a vote.
That's Sarah Feigenholz, Democratic state representative from Chicago. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's a pleasure.
We'll be back with more right after this. That's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guest, Bill Ruthart from the Chicago Tribune, colleague on the political team, Mike Reaver from the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, and Democratic State Representative Sarah Feigenholz. And now it's time to turn things over to Elton Jim.
Hey, how you doing there, Mr. Pearson?
I'm glad my Ottawa Senators were able to pull it off.
I, you know what? I give you credit. You're a Hawk fan. You're wearing the hat still.
Yes, I am.
Okay, that's good news, because I hope a lot of bandwagon people haven't been looking to Pittsburgh or some other team.
Well, I've adopted the Ottawa Senators.
You? Okay.
I have.
Well, you're in politics.
But I decided to go out of the country.
Right.
With number one.
Well, you said you'd move out of the country anyway.
I never said that.
Oh, that was Alec Baldwin.
Because I knew there'd be a lot of stories to write.
Oh, this is the greatest thing that could have happened to a journalist.
That's what keeps me alive.
No kidding.
No, but I decided I wanted to see a team that never won before.
Right. Very good.
And with Nashville and St. Louis, just can't root.
No. And it's been a very odd playoff season, certainly. Teams that you would never expect in it are still in it. So it'll be interesting to see who.
I mean, I would have truly been for the Maple Leafs if they were.
Yeah, that would have been a nice one, too, because an original six team.
Yeah, and like rooting for Montreal is like rooting for the Yankees.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so Plus, Shaw just went there. And
right.
We don't want them to do well.
No, not exactly. I don't want to vindicate that.
But
so that's my hockey knowledge.
And it's nice to see Starlin Castro doing well.
Yes, indeed.
Too bad he's wearing the other uniform.
Well, but you know, that's one of those, if that never came off.
No, yeah, exactly. No.
I'll take our championship last year versus how Starlin Castro is doing with the Yankees.
And when
now.
Did Spike Lee start following the Yankees now?
Because the Knicks are trash.
Oh, I know. But now we gotta deal with Spike Lee with a bad coat on, clapping when somebody does something well.
Oh.
Is he talking to Joe Girardi in the dugout? Oh. And how does he get those darn tickets? I live in Chicago. I've never sat that close in 50 years. Jeez.
Where was he at? Behind the bag
right?
at first?
Yeah. He was coaching first base. My God, he's going, go, take two.
Doing the wave.
Take two.
Yep.
Yeah, when that ball got past Zobrist, it's like, go.
Jeez.
Damn Yankees, and I'm not swearing. That's the name of
that's exactly
that's
right.
That's the name of a musical. Yes, and,
you gotta have heart.
Oh, you gotta have his heart.
Yeah. There we go.
Hello, Dorothy. Oh, that's the other.
Yes.
How did the Tin Man get such an East Coast accent? I loved how the Scarecrow and all three of them were supposedly from Kansas.
Right, the Midwest.
And they all sounded like they came from the Bronx. Hello, Dorothy.
Show tunes.
Yeah.
Show tunes.
Anyway, so now you are the spin. You are no spin? Or now that O'Reilly's gone, can you take spin?
Well, it's called the Sunday
right,
Spin.
Right, but now you own spin. There's no O'Reilly anymore.
Well, he's online.
Yeah, so am I. What does that mean?
Now, wait a minute. That's the future. Isn't that what they keep saying?
Yeah, tell my accountant that. He goes, hey, this future ain't coming. At least I don't have to pay taxes anymore.
Well that's...
April 15th came and went for me. Didn't even know.
Didn't even have to
file. I went to Applebee's. What's going on? Big deal. Give me a Blossom, whatever they are. One of those onion
blooming onion.
Blooming onion things. It's just another day to me. Thank you, Mr. Rick.
Thank you.
Okay.